Americas live and underway on this Monday night on ESPN Plus alongside Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Herc, how you doing over there? What you got on that shirt?
Oh, this is something I thought about when I realized I had to work with you again. It says, I am a Ferrari amongst Fiats.
Ooh, you cut me deep. You cut me deep. And here I was about to mention that we just missed a very important anniversary. You know, we love a good on this date on this show. And it was 10 years ago, Herc, yesterday, your free kick banger against Jamaica in World Cup qualifying. What a moment that was
1-0
for everybody.
1-0, Jamaica, Columbus, always in my heart.
Wow. Wow. Well, it would have been for yesterday's show. We got a lot to come on today's show. Jeff Carlisle is going to join us here on Football Americas to discuss, among other things, the fallout, Herc, from, remember, the Spygate scandal down in Orlando at the Open Cup final. We got Ethan Horvath's interview with Sam Borden as the latest installment in our Road to Qatar series. We got Santiago Jimenez heating up in Holland, or maybe we should say staying hot in Holland, and a tough schedule coming up in October for the U.S. women's national team. But let's start, Herc, in Liga MX, where Club America have set a club record for consecutive wins. How you like them apples? 9 victories in a row after they beat Necaxa away on Saturday by a final score of 2-1. Necaxa actually took the lead in the first 10 minutes, but America rallied thanks to goals from Jonathan Dos Santos. Yes, Jonathan Dos Santos. And as you see there, Roger Martinez. The win leaves Las Águilas in first place, even with Monterrey on points, but with a better goal difference and a game in hand on Rayados. All right, Herc. So what is, because I know if anyone can find it, it's you. What is this Club America's weakness?
If I had to find a weakness, because let's just say it.
Are you admitting you're stretching? You're stretching to find a weakness? Are you admitting that?
No, not stretching, but they've been impressive. Not just because of the 9 straight victories, but it's the way they are winning. They are clearly playing the best brand of football in all of Liga MX. And in my eyes, they're the best team in North America today. Wow. It's just a reality. But if I had to find a weakness with them, I think it's pretty notable that it's going to be Tano Ortiz. Just look at this game right here. They rested players against Necaxa. You just saw Jonathan, Dos Santos scoring a goal. You saw Roger scoring a goal. That's because the starters weren't playing. They mixed it up versus Necaxa when they probably should have waited to mix it up versus Santos midweek, because what comes after is going to be El Clásico versus Chivas, Clásico Nacional. So if I had to pick one, it's going to be Tano Ortiz, and we can go back to the playoffs of last year. Playoffs in a two-legged series versus Pachuca. A two-legged series where he sits out Richard Sanchez in leg one, saving him for leg two, and pretty much throws away that series. A series where instead of playing Henry Martin, he experiments with Federico Viñas, and it doesn't go his way, where they lose on aggregate 4-1. This is, if I had to pick something, had to find something, what's most noticeable. Notable, I should say, it's their manager, the lack of experience by Tano Ortiz. And listen, there's only one way to gain that experience, but you've learned many times, tenfold over, that in Liga MX, in playoffs, in Liguilla, it's about what you do in the post-temporada. And Guillermo Almada ate his lunch last time.
Okay, so Tano Ortiz, you're worried about him as the manager, right? I have to say that on this program, you have been wrong about Tano Ortiz before. You have not given him his due, Herc.
When he was an interim manager last time against Pachuca, when I told you he would.
When he was an interim manager, you didn't want them to give him the job. Then, when he got off to a slow start this season, you wanted him to fire him. And he's still there. He's pulled this team out of a downward spiral twice now, Herc. And you have still continued to doubt him.
You got me confused with Pedrosa.
Let me understand exactly what your concern is with Don Ortiz, because I do maybe understand a little bit here. Is it that he's going to pick the wrong lineup? Because right now I don't know if he knows what that best 11 is for Club America. There's so many options up top. There's so many options in midfield. I even think like we've seen a little bit of instability in terms of who's going to really be on that back line. So for me, that's maybe the question with Don Ortiz is, does he know what the best 11 is yet? Is that your big concern that he's going to get the lineup wrong?
I think he realizes his best 11. I just think in the critical moments of Liguilla, managing a two-leg series, it's where it's going to be all foreign to him, where it's going to be new to him, where he struggled against Pachuca, where Guillermo Almada ate his lunch last postseason.
So you don't think he has the technical nous? You don't think he's got the tactics for it?
No, it's not that I don't think he has the tactics for it, but if I need to find a weakness in this team, I think he's the glaring weakness. It's the inexperience of Tano Ortiz. Because everybody talks about this 9-game stretch of victories, which is very impressive, But is it more impressive than 73 points in the calendar year, which was historic in Liga MX? Because the guy who he took over for, Solari, he did that. He did that in two seasons. So we can sit here until we're blue in the face and talk about how impressive this is. But the reality is, and you know this very well, you're an Americanista. You won't care unless he lifts the cup. If they're one and out again to Pachuca again, because it was Solari to Pachuca that he was gone, and now it was Tano Ortiz to Pachuca and he's gone. If he's one and done again, it doesn't matter what kind of streak you had. It doesn't matter how good you were in said streak. It's a fracaso. It's a fracaso to you, to your team, to your fan base, and to the ownership group. So it could be a fracaso that ends up being your last fracaso with that team.
All right. There it is. Club America, according to Herc, it sounds
or
like
do you not agree?
Headed to a fracaso. No, of course. With Club America, you have to win the trophy.
No, what's their weakness?
At the end of the season. Honestly, I don't know that I really feel super confident in the defense. I know that's crazy because they haven't given up a ton of goals.
12 goals.
But like, but Néstor Araujo has like moved all around, hasn't always been in there. Is it Bruno Valdez and Cáceres? Like, what is it a back two? Is it a back three, which we've seen them play at sometimes?
Lara's novice,
I think for me, even though the goals against says they're very good defensively, that might be also a concern. If I were ever to be a pessimistic Herc America fan, which you know in how I am with my fandoms, I can be pessimistic from time to time. Let's stay on the Club America train, and we'll focus in here next, Herc, on Alejandro Sendejas, okay? Why? Because ESPN is reporting that the U.S. men's national team is continuing to follow the progress of the dual national attacker, who's having a great season with Las Águilas in Liga MX. Sendejas was born in Mexico, raised in El Paso, has represented the U.S. at youth national team level, and he's also played for Mexico, as we know, in two senior friendlies. Now, despite the apparent interest, Herc, important to note, sources are telling ESPN Mexico there's been no direct contact between Sendejas and U.S. soccer. All right, Herc. So, time is running out. We've got the September friendlies coming up. Should the United States and Greg Berhalter call up Alejandro Sendejas?
Yes, you should call him up. And people are going to start naming Christian Pulisic, Timothy Weah, Brendan Aaronson, Giovanni Reyna, but we're stacked in the wings, they're going to say, all these fans who are the U.S. men's national team. He's not really a winger. And when he broke out in Liga MX, it was with Necaxa as an interior, as an eight, where he was the highest goal-scoring Mexican in Liga MX. He had his breakout year playing in that position. And when I look at the names, when I look at the depth chart for the U.S. men's national team, in the midfield, you've got two locks. Okay, you got Weston McKennie as an eight, and you got Yunus Musa as an eight. Then there's Luca De La Torre, and then you have, wait a second, where am I going here? Because Greg Berhalter was using Christian Roldan. He was using Sebastian Legette. There's been a strong cry for people about Jordi Mihailovic and Malik Tillman. And I've been on that train.
But Gio Reyna's been mentioned as a potential player in midfield.
To move, right? But if you had to go straight now, just midfielders, this is where I think Sendejas could not only compete and fight for, but maybe push out one or two guys. So if you're telling me that he can't swim in that very, very shallow end after you're talking about the locks?
Wow.
I don't believe you. And through the history of the U.S. men's national team, at least the recent history, we've seen surprises every World Cup cycle. You look at 2014, it was John Brooks, Julian Green. You look at 2010, Robbie Finley, Edson Buttle, your boy. 2006, Clint Dempsey, Jimmy Conrad, was it Eddie Johnson? 2002, Paolo Mascherani, these two kids named DeMarcus Beasley and Landon Donovan, who had like a handful, if that, of World Cup qualifying games. So there's been surprises
all
throughout
more than
this
Sendejas.
History.
All more than Sendejas.
Well, I didn't have more than Sendejas.
You hadn't played more with the national team than he has? He hasn't played at all.
Well, hold on. I didn't have World Cup cycle. I had zero games in the World Cup cycle. Edson Buttle had zero games in the World Cup cycle. Robbie Finley had zero games in the World Cup cycle. This would not be a stretch if you look at the depth. Now, it's a September call-up. You got to see what he can do. And if he's there, and you give him a fighting chance.
Given the fact that it's a September call-up, right, you only call him up if you think he has a chance to make the team, right? You don't have the opportunity or time to waste. There's no future here. This is legit only if he has a chance to make the team. What percentage would you put that at? Right now, if you look at Alejandro Sendejas, you just listed off all these players in midfield because you don't consider him a winger. What percentage chance would you put it at? I would put it at zero. I would put it at 0% that he makes the team, either as a winger or a midfielder. We can go through that in a sec.
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
He's got more of a chance than I did for the 2010 World Cup before the crazy circumstances that led to me getting on that flight. Mm. I mean, because if you look at everything that happened, Eddie Johnson was injured. Charlie Davies got an unfortunate car accident. Every striker that Bob Bradley had,
okay,
for some reason, ended up falling out. It was like a crazy turn of events that got me there. I think he's got more of a fighting chance than I did in that time.
Okay, let's look at some of the guys. You mentioned the midfield, right? Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Yunus Musa, Luca Della Torre. You didn't mention Kellen Acosta, Roldan Legette,
different
Tillman.
Positions.
I mean, he's not going to break into that, is he? And he's certainly not going to break in
so
out wide.
So it's 26
Aronson.
Players, right? And you're going to look at players that can offer you what? Versatility?
Yeah, but out wide, it's Aronson, Pulisic, Reina, Weah, Arriola.
So,
I mean,
this
is he ahead of any of those guys?
Because now you have a player that can play two positions, multiple positions, and I think he's very good as an interior. Now, whether he takes him or not, I don't know. But if he takes him, I think he's got a fighting chance of getting on that flight.
All right, what about the other perspective here, which is Zendejas? Because I'm thinking about this from the choices that he has, which are obviously U.S. or Mexico. If you were going to advise him, which would you advise him to pick, looking at the depth chart you just went through with the United States and thinking about what the competition is with Mexico, i.e., which team needs him more? Because I think it's pretty clear it's Mexico.
It is Mexico. And maybe even for this World Cup with Tecatito Corona out. I mean, Tecatito Corona's out. You're looking at Orbelin Pineda. You're looking at Diego Lainez, and you're looking at Alexis Vega, and that's it. After that, Tata's going with Pizarro. So, yeah.
And if you think about midfield, like you said, he's versatile. Maybe he can play midfield. Andres Guardado barely got registered for Betis. Acha hasn't played in what?
Money.
Three weeks, almost a month. So there you go. There's a crisis building in that Mexican midfield. All right, let's keep it moving here, Herc. Speaking of the U.S. men's national team and youth national team standouts, Alejandro Zendejas was one. So was Zach Steffen back in his day. Steffen, of course, on loan from Manchester City to Middlesbrough in the championship, which you can watch on ESPN+. Reporter Alan Nixon, Herc, is reporting that Borough manager Chris Wilder wants to stick with Liam Roberts, the backup, who has played the last three games with Steffen out due to a knee injury. So we know this move was supposed to help secure Zach Steffen's hold on the U.S. and that number one job. Do you think his starting spot in Qatar, Herc, is now in jeopardy?
It is. It is now in jeopardy. And I'd go as far as saying it's not only a starting job that's in jeopardy. It could be his roster spot in Qatar that's in jeopardy. Because per Zach Steffen on this very program, when you interviewed him, he stressed how important it was to play for a goalkeeper, for himself. So if you're not playing and if you're not available to play, you can't be available for consideration, especially when it's you're leaving the door open for somebody else, which has been something of a trend for Zach Steffen. Now, the injuries are unfortunate. You know how highly I value and rate Zach Steffen. I think when he's healthy, he's the clear number one for me. But if you're not healthy and you keep leaving this door open, and we've seen it left open at the national team level, we can go back to the CONCACAF Nations League final. He comes out injured, and it's Ethan Horvat who comes in and plays hero, stopping an Andres Guardado penalty kick. And all of a sudden, Ethan Horvat is thrown into the equation. And then for injury worries again, he leaves the door open to Matt Turner. And then Matt Turner goes on to have a ridiculous Gold Cup. And then he has good outings with the U.S. men's national team. It's being left open, and players are taking advantage of it. Now, if you go down to the championship to play, you need to play. You can't be the backup there. And if that's the case, that's not only putting his starting position in jeopardy, that's putting his roster spot in jeopardy.
The question here is how much faith do you think you think Greg Berhalter has in Zach Steffen? I think we go back to that Mexico game, remember, where there was big doubts, was Steffen ready? And in that huge spot, even with Steffen not playing, not having that consistency, Greg Berhalter went with him. It would seem like a real stretch for me that he would forget about him, as you're saying, maybe entirely to the point where he went from the number one discussion to maybe falling out of the top three and not making it to
Qatar. And I'm talking about falling out of the top three just due to injury. I mean, I'm talking about staying available, staying ready. I mean, selection is one thing, like with a coach values or not, but you can't even give him the chance to select you because you're not healthy. That's the trend with Zach Steffen and leaving doors open. And I agree with you because it's Matt Turner on this very program that said, hey, listen, Greg Berhalter in the big games, Mexico, Costa Rica, whether I liked it or not, went with Zach Steffen.
Sure. It's one thing also to sit the bench when you're with City. It's another thing, right, to sit the bench with you in Middlesbrough. But this is like a developing situation for the U.S., isn't it? Because you don't really have a ton of great options. We just saw Matt Turner get a start for Arsenal in the Europa League. Is he now the incumbent, basically? Is he sitting in the driver's seat?
I think so. And again, maybe to no fault of Zach Steffen's own, because they're injuries, and it seems to be another knee injury. But since Dusseldorf, it's been an injury. And then he goes to City, and it's been injuries. With the U.S. men's national team, he's missed games because of injury. There seems to be a trend, and I've always heard throughout my career, it's better to be available than good. Well, this is a clear example of that.
All right, so we should probably mention Ethan Horvath and Sean Johnson as well. They're in the mix. We'll discuss Ethan Horvath a little bit later on in the show. Speaking of U.S. men's national team research, let's run it back. USMNT edition. Jesus Ferreira with a couple goals against LAFC in a 2-1 win for FC Dallas. This one off the quick restart. Nice assist from Paul Areola, the heads-up play.
Ah, ridiculous heads-up play. Was that a toe poke? Romario! That was a sick goal. And then I don't know if you can give him this, but they gave him this. This is more a Bale goal to me. That's not going on target. That's curling away. Gareth Bale puts it in his own net. He'll take that. That's the 18th goal.
18, tying a Dallas single season goal scoring record, and he still has 3 games to go. Another product of the FC Dallas Academy, Ricardo Pepi off the bench and a game-winning assist for Groningen over the weekend as they beat SC Cambuur 1-0. Pepi setting up Thomas Suslov for the game's only goal. Groningen 9th in the table. Nice Eredivisie debut for Ricardo Pepi after his loan move to Augsburg. And of course, the Eredivisie available for you on ESPN+. All right, Herc, time to talk number 9s. We got a lot of candidates for the U.S. striker position. It is only one assist, Herc, but should Greg Berhalter call up Ricardo Pepi for the upcoming September friendlies with all the other options available to him?
Remind me a few things. Where are these friendlies?
Europe.
In Europe. A few other things. How many more games until the World Cup?
Two. Unless
games.
We get another friendly somewhere in the mix before the World Cup.
Right now, as we know, there are two games left for the World Cup. So Ricardo Pepi's coming off an abysmal time in the Bundesliga with Augsburg. He now has a new lease on life in the Eredivisie. Remind me again if there's one player you had to say save Greg Berhalter's job in the opening window of World Cup qualifying.
You say it.
Yeah. Who was it?
Ricardo Pepi with the goals against Honduras very early on in the first window,
because it
third
was an
game,
abysmal,
second half.
Abysmal showing against El Salvador. It was an even worse showing tie.
Does Greg Berhalter owe him a
Canada.
Spot in Qatar for that?
No. But listen to this, okay? It was a terrible 45 minutes when you're down a goal, okay? It's Ricardo Pepi who has a hand or foot in all 4 goals that you score in the second half that give you life, breathing room. It's also Ricardo Pepi that then goes on to score against Costa Rica and does well in the other games that give you some time to operate, some time to make things go well. And it's Ricardo Pepi who sought out advice from Greg Berhalter about where he should go in Europe. And it's Greg Berhalter who heavily influenced him to go to Augsburg. So in Greg Berhalter's mind, maybe subconsciously, he's going to feel indebted to him, at least to afford every opportunity to him to lose this position. I can think of no better way than saying, hey, here are 2 games in Europe. Show me what you have. Show me you can still do it because time's a-ticking. I think he's in the September call-up, and I think this is Berhalter's way of saying, here's your chance.
Okay. Last chance, probably, right? Because if you give Pepi this shot, you're taking that chance away from somebody else. So I wonder who you think it's going to be. I mean, I'm imagining maybe there's 3 strikers called into this group, which we think is going to drop around the midweek this week. Is it Pepi and Sargent and Ferreira? Is it Haji Wright in the mix? Is it Jordan Pefok? Like, who is going to these call-ups with Pepi?
If I think I can play Greg Berhalter's hand, how he would, Nico Estevez being a friend of his, being somebody who was in his coaching tree, FC Dallas trying to get into that MLS playoffs at a higher seed in the Western Conference Final. I would think they've got a good understanding that probably Jesus Ferreira is on that flight. You would see more of a Euro-based forward system or pool, I should say, for Greg Berhalter. I would think it's Josh Sargent. It is Jordan Pefok, and he will go with a Haji Wright.
Haji Wright, all right. So Brandon Vasquez then getting left out as
Ricardo
well,
Pepe, you expect. Haji Wright.
You expect. Okay, so well, both of them, four-forward call-up. Look at that.
Yeah.
What an interesting roster twist that would be.
Those are the questions.
All right, U.S. men's national team against Japan. That's the first of two games. That's next Friday on ESPN2 and ESPN+. Coverage starts early, and by the way, Football Americas will be live post-game on ESPN+. Don't miss that special edition of the show.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Turning our attention to the Mexican national team now, Herc, where Santiago Jimenez continues to light it up since his move to Europe, going from Cruz Azul to Feyenoord in the Dutch top flight. The goals are the good news. There's also some bad news. Last week, Jimenez scored a brace coming off the bench in a Europa League defeat. One of the goals was via penalty, a penalty he was apparently not supposed to take. Feyenoord captain Orkun Kosku saying he was disappointed in Jimenez, who had, quote, disobeyed him as captain. There's been a big reaction in Netherlands to this, Herc. Are you cool with Santiago Jimenez's actions with his new team?
Yeah, I'm cool with it. let me tell
really?
You why. Let me tell you why. And I will tell you why, okay?
I'm surprised.
Orkun Kosu, the captain, if you see the video, he didn't fight him very hard to give him the ball. Okay? And as a nine, what you want to do, especially when you're going to go play the Europa League, when you're going to debut in one of the biggest competitions in the world, that for you might be a dream, is you want to make a good impression. You want to gain confidence with your new team. So as a nine, you need goals. Penalty kicks are usually freebies for those nines. Usually money. Usually 100%. And that's what he did. That goal also gave him the confidence for, guess what, goal number two that would come later. So I'm cool with it because the captain didn't fight too hard, and I'm also assuming and understanding that Santiago Jimenez, just because of everything I've seen from him, either one of two things. It was made very clear that there are no hierarchies, so the coach didn't say this guy takes it, or on the board it wasn't that guy takes it, and decided I should take it. And number two, he made it. So if you're the captain, what's worse, doing that or publicly airing this type of thing for all to see? It's embarrassing for the captain that he would have to go to the public or the press on this. You could have just pulled the player aside and talked to him, and that would have been it. But you felt the need to publicly expose this type of dirty laundry. This is more on the captain than it is Santi Jimenez. You're a nine. You're a goal scorer. That's what you want to do. And as the captain, what do you want? You want to score the goal. He scored the goal.
I would have thought that you, as a former player, would tell us everything that was wrong with this interaction, having been in the locker room, that he had crossed some line, broken some rule. The captain does claim that there was a list, that the manager does have a list. The captain was number one on that list, so it was his penalty to take. What will his teammates think? Because he's not just ineffective, if you want to believe the captain, kind of disobeying him.
His teammates he's a sucker. The captain's
he's
a sucker
also disobeying
for letting
the coach. What will the coach say, Herc?
That's what the teammates are going to think if this is really how it went down. You let a 21-year-old kid take the ball from me and you're a captain?
What does the manager think about Jimenez disobeying him?
Let me tell you something about this, okay? I had a situation like this, exactly like this happened with me, Chivas versus Santos, okay? I scored an early goal. We're still down 2-1. Came on at halftime, scored a goal. Last minute of the game, okay? Penalty kick, our favor. Nobody wants to take the penalty. I just scored a goal. I go and take the penalty, okay? I end up missing the penalty against Chivas last second of the game. The coach kills me to the press. Publicly airs out everything like he wasn't on the list. He wasn't designated taker. I ate it, no problem. Next day at training, I go into his office and I reamed him out. I called him a sucker. I said, I can't believe this is how you would react to the press. This guy didn't want to take it. That guy didn't want to take it. He didn't want to take it. I was the only one with the stones to take it. And you know who misses those? The guys with the stones to take it. It's not always as cut and dry, Seb. It's not always black and white. Here's your list. Sometimes on the field, you got guys who shy away.
Buried in all this is the success Santiago Jimenez is having. 5 games, 4 goals, 1 assist, all in less than 100 minutes, and all, Herc, without a start yet for Feyenoord. He is by far Mexico's hottest number 9 at the moment. And here's the makeup on Instagram. Captain and striker back together. Herc, are you buying it? All good?
Yeah, I mean, the captain's, he's soft, man. I got to talk to Dennis DeClose. Like, what? This is ridiculous.
All right, let's run it back, El Tri style. And we'll actually start with Santiago Jimenez, the aforementioned, who scored a goal over the weekend in Feyenoord's 3-0 win over Sparta Rotterdam. There you see it, came in the 73rd minute. It's the local derby there for Feyenoord, and as mentioned, that's now 4 goals since arriving in Europe for the ex-Cruz Azul man, Santiago Jimenez. And after the big win over their local rivals, Jimenez spoke to ESPN.
Pues yo la verdad me he sentido en casa desde que llegué. Me han recibido muy bien la afición, no solo porque he marcado goles, sino desde antes de que marcara goles ya la afición me hizo sentir en casa y les agradezco mucho y espero poder regresárselo con esto, con muchos goles.
Por último, ¿está todo bien con Cocho entonces?
Sí, no, o sea, no fue nada grave. Yo creo que los medios por ahí lo hicieron un poco más grande de lo que fue, pero siempre estuvimos excelente.
Elsewhere in Europe, Jorge Sanchez getting his first Eredivisie start for Ajax as they beat Heerenveen 5-0 on Saturday. Hurt?
Yeah, this is a good assist, but that through ball from Edson, that is sexy. Good vision, good little through ball. They have a good understanding with each other from the Mexican national team, and Jorge Sanchez, first assist.
First start, first assist. Ajax, top of the league, 2 points ahead of Santiago Jimenez and Feyenoord. From Holland to Greece, Orbelin Pineda with his 3rd goal of the season for AEK Athens. Unfortunately, comes hurt in a defeat 2-1 to Panathinaikos.
Yeah, Panathinaikos, top of the league, and well, AEK Athens, they're trying to stay afloat. What is it, 2-2, 7th place right now? This is a good goal by El Maguito, and then, look, staple finish right there.
And Pineda staying hot, making a bid for more playing time with El Tri. Eric Sanchez, 2 goals and an assist. Alexis Vega first with a goal against Puebla. Jorge, golazo against Puebla.
It really is a golazo. Great timing, too. Look, this right here, he gets a little pull right there. Gets him off balance, but the finish of the left foot is superb. 3rd of the season.
Big goal there for Chivas against Puebla from Vega, who got the big one late. As I mentioned, Eric Sanchez, 2 goals and an assist against Xolos as Pachuca won 6-1 on Sunday.
Oh, what a golazo. 2 goals and an assist. Pachuca's heating up at the right time. They've got some ballers. Obviously, Kevin Alvarez, Luis Chavez, those kids know how to ball. They are heating up at the right time and not a bad time to get your brace. Two goals and an assist.
Almada calling for all those guys to get called up by Tata Martino for the next El Tri call-up. Just a few days. Big win as Xolos continue to struggle. Sorry to our many Tijuana fans on the production team. Jesús Gallardo, he's heating up. 3rd goal of the season for Rayados.
Yeah, what does Moreno say? Optional defending, and how about the goalkeeper? That's your near post, Talavera. You can't get beat there. I mean, what's going on here? Just right through everybody, and oh no, Tala.
So that's our Mexican national team pool. Run it back, Herc. But anybody that was paying attention to Liga MX over the weekend saw some goalie wars. Well, if not goalie wars, at least goalie goals. Carlos Acevedo late for Santos in the 3-3 against Querétaro.
Yeah, that's being brave. Look where he put his head. Ends up crashing with another player right there, but he gets the game tying. Look, it's right there in between 3 guys and Querétaro's head coach. Literally said, that's all we needed, a goalkeeper to score against us. They can't catch a break.
Hey, Mexico needs a forward. I'm just saying, you said versatile players have a better chance of making the World Cup squad. There it is. More goalie goals. Julio Gonzalez, a late one for Pumas.
Yeah, Dani Alves, fourth assist of the season. Julio Gonzalez actually had a goal that was very much his fault. Needed this one. What a header, snaps it down. And look at this, look at this. All by himself. I don't know why nobody wanted to at least pick him up. Well, he'll take that.
Julio Gonzalez getting it done against Toluca. So, what does the Liga MX table look like? Remember, the top four go straight into the quarterfinals. 5-12 into the play-in. Or repechaje, as you can see, going to be a very dramatic end to the season down in Mexico. Coming up on Sunday, more Liga MX for you on ESPN Deportes and right here on ESPN Plus as well. One of Herc's former teams, Santos Laguna against FC Juarez. Coverage starts 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday. All right, Herc, let's turn our attention to a story we've been covering for a while. Bombshell article earlier this month from Jeff Carlisle at ESPN.com detailing the reported efforts of Portland Thorns and Timbers owner Merritt Paulson to dissuade Paul Riley from applying to the U.S. Women's National Team manager job back in 2019. Riley, of course, the longtime NWSL manager, fired from his job with the North Carolina Courage last year amid accusations of sexual harassment and coercion of players dating back to his time in Portland when he was Thorns manager in 2014 and 2015. Joining us now, the author of said bombshell article, Jeff Carlisle. Jeff, it's been too long. Great to have you back with us here on Football Americas.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's get into the why and the how. Why exactly did Merritt Paulson dissuade Paul Riley from trying to take the U.S. Women's National Team job? How did he do it? And maybe most importantly of all, why is it so important, Jeff, that he would have tried to do that?
Well, how he did it was he and the North Carolina Courage owner, Steve Malik, had a phone call together. And in that phone call, Merritt Paulson said that it would be, quote, a good idea, unquote, if Paul Riley withdrew from consideration. Now, obviously, that would have done a couple things. It would have reduced the level of scrutiny that was on Paul Riley and would have prevented the details of, you know, his firing in Portland from coming out. And it also would have preserved the reputation of the clubs involved, that being the Portland Thorns and the North Carolina Courage. So, you know, why this is important? I think this is another instance of the game's gatekeepers looking to not only protect the professional reputation of Paul Riley, but their own reputations as well. All of that at the expense of player safety. I mean, some of the allegations that were leveled at Paul Riley and have been leveled at other NWSL coaches, I guess I should say former NWSL coaches, have been horrific. And so, you know, again, this is just another case of again, some of the game's gatekeepers making some really poor decisions at the expense of the players who, you know, presumably they're there to protect.
Jeff, these revelations come from an investigation of a law firm into the Portland Thorns and Timbers organization into the accusations against Paul Riley. I'm curious if anything else came about this investigation.
A few things. Originally, Riley's departure was portrayed as kind of a mutual parting of the ways. You know, his contract wasn't renewed. He wanted to go back to the East Coast. But what this investigation revealed was that, at least to the employees of the Timbers and the Thorns, was that, you know, Riley was terminated for cause. And, he all kinds of things like breach of fiduciary duty, public embarrassment, things of that sort. The letter, the termination letter to Riley, you know, from what the law firm reports, did say that nothing unlawful happened. And that was kind of a crucial element into Paul Riley's departure from Portland, because it kind of opened the door to allow him to be hired by somebody else. And that's exactly what happened. Some other revelations, the interview process of Mana Shim, who originally reported these accusations or originally leveled these accusations, and also Sinead Farrelly was only interviewed once, and that was to corroborate Mana Shim's allegations. And, you know, as it turned out, in the reporting by The Athletic, Sinead Farrelly was engaged in a allegedly, you know, sexual relationship with Paul Riley. And so, you know, why didn't that come out? Well, They only did one interview with Sinead Farrelly because they decided that once they had reached the threshold that they're going to fire Paul Riley, they didn't really need to dig any deeper. And that is unfortunate because certainly some additional details came out about the relationship between Farrelly and Riley. And so there was some kind of excuse making, I think, by the law firm, because they said that the law firm that did the initial investigation didn't really know about grooming, didn't really know about trauma-informed investigations. I mean, grooming's been around for decades. I mean, you know, I talked to one expert in employment law, and he made that assertion that, you know, obviously the concept of grooming has been around for a while. So it almost looks like the initial investigation was kind of being left off the hook a little bit. And there were also some other revelations about how Riley got hired again. I mean, the Western New York Flash, who eventually became the North Carolina Courage, they reached out to the Thorns and said, what kind of a coach is Paul Riley? And, you know, Gavin Wilkinson, the Thorns president of soccer, he was basically instructed to say, anything about how Riley was fired, you've got to defer to the league. You've got to forward the Flash onto the league. And so at that point, Gavin Wilkinson was left with the question of what kind of a coach is he? What's he like on the field? And at the time, Riley had a good reputation as a coach within NWSL circles, just in terms of his on-field performance, as if you can ignore, you know, the other accusations that resulted in his firing. I mean, to me, you can't separate one from the other, but that was the position that the Thorns took. And Riley was hired 5 months later by the Western New York Flash and eventually moved down to Carolina with the team when they were relocated.
So, Jeff, it feels like things are kind of piling up in Portland when it comes to these situations. We've got the aforementioned. We've got the handling of the Andy Polo situation with the Portland Timbers. We've got the Oregonian report about a toxic work environment, especially for female employees. How far are we away from potential discussions about potentially a change in ownership in Portland? I ask that again, just basically thinking back to what we've seen in the past with Real Salt Lake, Deloy Hansen, and RSL and the Real Monarchs.
Well, I mean, outwardly, it appears that the rules are not the same for everybody. You know, obviously, Deloy Hansen did what he did. He made the comments that he made. He oversaw a toxic work environment with Real Salt Lake. And eventually, he was forced to sell the team. But I think Don Garber, back in February, right before the start of the season, I mean, he said the quiet part out loud. I mean, the league very much values Hank Paulson, Merritt's father, and Hank Paulson's a former U.S. Treasury Secretary, investment bank executive. The league really values his contribution at board meetings, just in terms of the future direction of the league. And so I think that's kind of current ownership's ace in the hole. I mean, those owners in Portland are valued to a degree that I don't think Deloy Hansen was. And so at this point, I would be surprised if the league took that step. But again, we'll see what happens and we'll see what kinds of discussions are going on behind closed doors.
Hey, Jeff, before we let you go, you know, Sebi and I were actually in Orlando for the US Open Cup final. And the big story, at least pregame, was Spygate. Apparently, allegedly, I should say, or I guess it's not even alleged. It was confirmed. An employee of Orlando City was caught spying a Sacramento Republic training session. You were on top of this, tweeting all about it. What came about this? What do you know as of now?
Well, within the U.S. Open Cup committee, that's inside the U.S. Soccer Federation, there is a adjudication and disciplinary panel. And basically any kind of complaint or protest that is made in relation to a U.S. Open Cup match is forwarded onto them. I reached out to U.S. Soccer earlier today. They told me that there's going to be, hopefully, the goal is for them to meet later this week. But I think at some point, now it's not a question of whether they will meet. I mean, it's just a question of when. And then we'll see what that panel decides. I don't think at this point the game is going to be forfeited or anything like that. I mean, the game has been played and Orlando won. But it would not surprise me if there was some kind of fine, some kind of light sanction, just to kind of get the message across that what was done is not okay and shouldn't be repeated in the future. But it will also be interesting to see if the USSF takes some steps to arrange for training facilities for visiting teams in the latter stages of the competition. You know, my understanding is that Sacramento had to find a facility on their own. It was a holiday weekend. I think there might have been a little home cooking involved in terms of fields being made available or not being made available. So I think in the future, it would probably behoove the USSF to just make those arrangements themselves and eliminate the possibility of something like this happening again.
Home cooking, that's what you get when you host the U.S. Open Cup Final. There he is, Jeff Carlisle of ESPN.com. Jeff, thanks as always for joining us here on Football Americas.
My pleasure.
What did you see in that first 45, and what do you want to see in the second half?
I don't know if the ref's Canadian or what, but the last couple calls are ridiculous.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, our time for the good, bad, and ugly. More MLS. Caleb Porter upset after Columbus blew a 2-0 lead late against Montreal over the weekend. The good here, though, is Montreal. They clinched a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. They also, Herc, set a franchise record for points. Who said rebrands can't work?
That's right. Look, club record, win 16, points 53, and goals scored. Oh, Nancy's doing a ridiculous job here. Listen to the next four games. I'm going to tell you. There's four games left, okay? Very winnable games for Montreal. Chicago home, New England away, DC United at home, that's for sure, and Inter Miami away. Woo!
To the bad, the New England Revolution. Shout out to Opta for this stat. The Revs have dropped 29 points from winning positions this year, Herc. Most in Major League Soccer. They did it again this weekend, blowing a 1-0 lead and losing 2-1 to the New York Red Bulls.
That's insane to me, especially where this team was last year. 73 points in a calendar year. By far the best team in the regular season in Major League Soccer. To this, Bruce Arena, by the way, has only missed MLS playoffs once. That was just in 2008 after taking over for the LA Galaxy, with the LA Galaxy. About to do it again with the way the East is going right now. This is crazy to me.
We got campeonitis everywhere. Supporter Shield campeonitis here in Major League Soccer. We got in NWSL. We got in Liga MX with Atlas. The Revs, they're struggling a year after taking home some hardware. Ugly. Oh, Mark. Another penalty miss for Javier Chicharito Hernandez. This one comes in a 1-1 draw for the Galaxy against Nashville. Joe Willis with the big save there. At least it wasn't as bad, it wasn't as ugly as the Panenka miss, right?
Oh, man. You know what the worst part is? He had a discussion with Vasquez, Brugman, Marky Delgado. Kind of said, no, I'm going to take it. Still ends up missing it.
All right, Herc, so what do you think? Is it time for Chicharito, the great goal scorer, to give up taking penalties for good?
Yeah, it's time. You could be a great goal scorer and just not be good at penalties, and that's fine. You're still a great goal scorer, and that is where Javier Hernandez is today. But somebody needs to talk to him. And it's not something like, hey, you need a friend. You need a life coach. It needs to be the head coach. You can't take the penalty kicks anymore because at this point, it's costing the team. It's costing the team points in a very contested playoff race. Right now, you're below the playoff line. You're chasing RSL. Those points, I know it's game in hand for the LA Galaxy, but time is running out. Those points could prove costly. We've already seen last season how important a single point can be for the Los Angeles Galaxy. You saw what happened when RSL visited Kansas City and ended up winning that game in Kansas City. As bogus of a win as it should have been for RSL Lake, maybe it should have been a penalty, or a handball, no goal. It wasn't the case. You were 1 point away from going postseason. Look at this, Seb. Look at this. It's not just Javier Hernandez. Dejan Jovelic just missed. It's to the point right now where the only ones who are confident in actually shooting the ball are Marky Delgado, Sasha Kljestan, and Ricky Pouch.
So whose role is it to kind of step in here? Obviously, Chicharito Hernandez, you would hope the player would say, hey, I'm struggling here. I take myself out. But he's a great player. He's a goal scorer for a reason. And a big part of that is ego, right? Clearly, it's difficult for him to step away even when he's not converting at a decent rate. Is this on Greg Vanney? Is this kind of a thing that Greg Vanney has to take a hold of right now for the LA Galaxy at a critical point in the season?
It's strange because it really shouldn't be on a coach to tell somebody, hey, maybe it's not you. You should have a little self-awareness there. But at this point, it is Greg Vanney. And Greg Vanney needs to have discussion about Maybe next season or maybe in the future. But right now, you're not in a good headspace for a penalty kick. You need to come out. Somebody else needs to do it. But this is crazy to me when I saw this stat.
Like, how do you explain it? How do you explain that somebody who's so good at finishing is so bad at penalties?
Well, look at the names on this list. I mean, Carlos Vela happens to be the worst in Major League Soccer over the last three seasons in conversion rate. And then it's Chicharito Hernandez, and then it's Nani. Like, the names on this list are baffling to me. Players that have played at such a high level that could deal with pressure and miss a shot from a little over 10 yards out. It is insane to me. But it needs to stop for the LA Galaxy. Listen to their calendar, a very winnable calendar. And this is very important for the LA Galaxy. You've got Vancouver away, winnable. Colorado at home, a team that you're fighting for that playoff spot with. San Jose away, winnable, and it's a Clasico as well. RSL at home, the team you're literally chasing in that final playoff spot. And then Houston away, Houston's a dumpster fire. Like, it's a very winnable calendar. You shouldn't be in this position where you're fighting and tooth and nail for every single point, but you are because of the missed opportunities. And they're not missed opportunities as we didn't take our chances well, we didn't defend well. It's I couldn't put a spot kick in type of missed opportunity.
All right, so the Galaxy fighting for a playoff spot out in the Western Conference. You know who else is? The Portland Timbers. It's the Caleb Porter Bowl, speaking of. Columbus against Portland, Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. ESPN Deportes, and of course, streaming live on the ESPN app. Kirk, what about the U.S. Women's National Team? Big news for the defending World Cup champions. U.S. Soccer announcing that the national team will face off against Spain on October 11th in Pamplona. So another difficult road test, this one coming just a few days after the United States faces off against England at Wembley in what we know will be a sellout. So, Herc, the U.S. is the number one ranked team in the world. They are the defending World Cup champions. What are your expectations for the two games against England and Spain? Two wins?
It's very easy. My expectation is, at least from everything you've told me, is to show us that they are still the best team in the world. Mm-hmm. Two very difficult games in away settings, settings that you don't necessarily find in the CONCACAF environment. You're going to play England, Euro champions, and then you're going to play Spain, who happened to lose to England in the quarters, but were 4 minutes away from actually winning that game. If not for an Eletun equalizer about 4 minutes from the end of time that forced into overtime, and then you know what happened. England took the rest. For a team that you maintain is still the best in the world, but its players, majority of them, didn't crack the top 10 in the ESPN top 50 women's players in the world. And if you look at the short list of the women for the Ballon d'Or on the American side, you had Catalina Macario, who's out with an ACL. You had Trinity Rodman, who's had an abysmal season with the Washington Spirit, and Alex Morgan, who is of the old guard. So for a young team right now that's going in transition, I expect them, according to you, to show us that they are still the best team in the world.
Right, so you're saying that according to what I say, they are the best team in the world. They should win two games. I'm actually thinking we should be tempering expectations here. Based somewhat on what you just said, which is where they're going to be playing, I think we all thought that when they went down to the CONCACAF W Championship in Mexico, they would get some big crowds, some intimidating atmospheres. If we're honest, that didn't really happen.
Nor the big wins, Sebi.
It didn't really happen. They got some good wins, but they didn't really get tested in terms of a very difficult environment. A sold-out Wembley is a difficult environment. You know they're going to be going crazy there. You know it's going to be intense in Spain as well. And the U.S. has been in Spain before and struggled against this Spanish team who loves to boss the ball. We saw them, I would say, in fact, struggle against the Spanish team at the last World Cup, too, in the knockout round. So I actually would be really surprised if the U.S. wins both of these games in the upcoming window. I also say that, Herc, because we didn't see the best of the U.S. at the CONCACAF W Championships. Yep. Vlatko Andonovski himself told us they will be ready for the World Cup in 2023, but they're not ready quite yet. So I think this, going away, going to England, going to Spain, is going to be a real tough test. And I don't know that I expect them to win both games. I don't think I expect them to lose both games, but I think a win and a draw would be a very, very good window. That would be an acceptable window for me for the U.S. Women's National Team as they face off against two of the best teams in the world in England and in Spain. Let's run it back from elsewhere in the women's game. Start with Alex Morgan. 15th goal, Herc, of the season. A lot of them have been from the spot, but that's still 15 goals.
15 goals, four clear of Diana Ordóñez and Sophia Smith, both with 11. Listen to this, three more to go to tie Sam Kerr's regular season record, which is insane at her age. This is insane that she's performing so well.
That came in a crazy game, her crazy game between the San Diego Wave and my Washington Spirit. Rose LaBelle of OL Reign with her fourth goal of the season off that left foot against Chicago.
It's a banger, too. Like, somebody's got to step to her. You know she could bang it. Step to her. Oh, look at the movement on that ball.
Rose LaBelle, always magic for OL Reign, celebrating against the Red Stars. Special moment here, Crystal Dunn returns to the field for the Portland Thorns less than 4 months after giving birth. What a moment.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about this. That's crazy to me. Like, how physically fit you have to be to do this. This is my respect to the women out there in Crystal Dunn, because this is insane.
Yep. Remember, at one point, my number one player in the world a couple years ago when I got to vote on the ESPN FC Top 50. She'll be big for Portland. She'll be big for the U.S. Women's National Team when she gets back with the Stars and Stripes as well. Herc, I don't know if you saw this. What did you make of this? Amber Brooks scored a brace for Washington against San Diego Wave in that crazy game we were just talking about before. But she really, Herc, made headlines for her reaction to a pretty obvious missed call,
yeah,
where it appears that she turns and flips not one, Herc, but two birds over towards the opposite sideline. And she was caught on camera, and it wasn't on just any old stream, Herc. It was on big CBS national TV. What do you think?
All right, so Amber Brooks.
There it is.
There it is. Amber, this, by the way, that corner kick ended up being the game-tying goal,
yes,
against San Diego.
It was significant.
It was significant, without a doubt. Amber Brooks is a defender who ended up scoring two goals. So she's already on the high there, right? But she also caused a penalty into Alex Morgan. That's one. And then the corner kick, ensuing corner kick, which ends up tying the game. I can understand the wave of emotions going through, but you cannot do this. You cannot do this and you will be suspended. I get it. But also, I am here for it. Oftentimes in North American football, North American soccer, we are so vanilla, so bland. There are no villains, no storylines. I love this, Amber Brooks, but there are consequences to it.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if she doesn't get to, at least a call from the league office as we take a look at the NWSL table. Playoffs coming up, top six get in. And there you see 1-7, it's very tight. Kansas City Current with a 1-0 win over Gotham FC over the weekend. That has them, as of right now, top of the table.
Seb,
in the National
Seb, congratulations! They also snapped a 16-game losing streak with that.
There it is, the big 4-3 win for the Spirit. There's some good news in Washington, D.C. on a soccer front, as the Spirit do pick up a victory over San Diego, who was first place in the league. All right, Herc, time to continue the road to Qatar. Our latest installment features Ethan Horvath, who sat down with Sam Borden. Let's check it out right now.
Ben Davis, great save, Horvath. He'll hit that. Good save, Horvath. Jefferson, saved by Horvath.
And that'll be it for Stefan. He'll pass the torch to Ethan Horvath.
Well, it's a big moment for the 25-year-old Ethan Horvath.
It's palmed away by Horvath. A huge save by the substitute goalkeeper.
It's going to create just a bit of space, Horvath.
Ever since you're little, growing up, dreaming of World Cup, just representing your country. So for it to happen, and for it to happen at the age of 20 as well, it was a really, really special moment. And like we said, it's probably why we're doing this, something I'll never forget.
Your backstory is interesting. You went and you were playing in Norway at a pretty young age, right? How did that all happen, and sort of can you walk me through what led you to be in that situation?
Long story short is kind of went on this European tour, and we were there for like 3 weeks, so it was like teams, scouts always came, watched trainings, and we played teams from like Germany, Italy, Switzerland, so teams and scouts came and watched stuff. And I was, I want to say 16, 17 at the time. Yeah, that's when Molde saw me. So after those period with the team was done, I went to Molde for 1 week to train and whatnot. And after the first training, the goalkeeper coach, Richard Hardis, and the head coach, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, just called me in and said, like, yeah, we've seen enough. We want to sign you. But the thing is, since I was so young, the problem was staying in the country since I was so young. So after that week, I went back to the U.S., started junior year of high school the next day after I landed. And then from there, you know, just went about normal life, and then I had to go back to California for a U18 camp, and that's when Molde called, just asking if does Ethan have a team, what's going on. And so that's kind of where it all started. So after that camp, I went back to Norway, and it all kind of started from there. So I was there for 3 months on my passport, and when I had to go back to reset my passport, they flew my parents over and kicked off from there.
A lot of guys go over and don't have their family around. What was it like for you to be able to go through that and after the first 3 months have your parents there with you?
Yeah, it was really special and helped a ton because I was 17, 18 at the time now. And so to be at a young age like that in a foreign country, never been to, don't understand the language, it was really, really nice and made the transition really easy to have my parents there for 2 years before they went back home.
What did they do while you were training all day? I mean, did they work or what happened? Like, I mean, 2 years is a long time.
They worked at the stadium. The club got them jobs. It wasn't the most glamorous job, just like custodians at the stadium, because to get a work visa, you have to do something. So that's what they did. And since I was that young, I was able to get a family visa with them. And yeah, you know, like, I know it was not nice job, but at the same time, I know it was special because while I was training, they were able to watch training and yeah, see the evolution of everything.
That's a big sacrifice though. I mean, you know, for them to put their lives on hold, I'm sure, you know, you must look at sort of where it's led you and be really grateful.
Yeah, 100%. You know, if we didn't do that, who knows what the path or what would have happened, you know? So yeah, just really, really grateful for that.
You know, guys talk about competition for positions all the time, but it feels like with goalkeepers, it's a little bit different because there just isn't as much rotation generally. How do you go about coming into a camp and knowing that there are several talented keepers who are all trying to get the same job that you're looking for?
Yeah, you know, you can only control yourself and what you do, you know, so you just go, first of all, day by day and support each other because, you know, it's a team sport at the end of the day and we all have the same goals and same objectives. But like from my point of view, you know, you just got to control what you can control, and that's just how well you train and how much you put into it.
You've had some really memorable moments already with the national team. What do you remember about that night against Mexico?
Yeah, almost everything. It was really, really special to, like, for me, it's not so much the penalty save. It was just to have it in my hometown and in front of family and friends. That's what I remember the most, just to share that moment with everybody and then the team, of course.
What would it mean to you to have moments like that, or hopefully even better ones, if the team is able to make it to Qatar?
Yeah, I don't think it's just for me, but everybody, you know, like we said, growing up from whenever you started playing the sport and watching it and watching the World Cup and everything, you know, it's memories that will last a lifetime. I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. It was everyone's dream to represent your country in a World Cup.
All right, so Ethan Horvath back into the starting lineup in recent games for Luton Town in the championship, which we will remind folks again, you can watch on ESPN Plus this season. As we told you earlier in the show, Zach Steffen is out of favor at Middlesbrough, Herc. So what does that mean for Ethan Horvath's World Cup chances, you suppose?
Well, they increase. I think that's the obvious there. But let's assume that Zach Steffen is still in the picture and Matt Turner is still in the picture. And it's very much a 1-2 race for who's that starting goalkeeper. It's the third goalkeeper, right? That's where Ethan Horvath would fall into. And your competition is Sean Johnson. And let's say if you want to include, because I know you like Gaga Slonina, Gaga in that list. So there's a three. Okay. One of those players has stepped up for the U.S. men's national team in a primetime moment. You saw him light up when he was asked about stepping in the CONCACAF Nations League final and that penalty kick moment against Andres Guardado. Only one of them has that moment. The biggest goalkeeping moment to date under Greg Berhalter's tenure might have been that exact moment. And probably, I would say, that exact moment behind Zach Steffen versus Mexico. So, yeah. He probably has that third goalkeeper spot in line.
Really? All right. I would have gone with the opposite. I would have said, yes, of course, you got Turner and you got Zach Steffen as your favorites. And then you've got kind of the dark horse category, which includes both Sean Johnson and Ethan Horvath. I think Sean Johnson's a better goalie and also a better candidate to be the dark horse to make it as the third goalie, despite the fact that, as you say, it's fair to mention the big moment
dark horse
belongs
would,
to Ethan Horvath.
Fine,
but Sean Johnson has much more experience.
But for sure, but that's why he wouldn't be a dark horse. Dark horse would be Gaga Slonina out of nowhere. That's a dark horse, right?
Okay, I'm just breaking it down for that. However you want to call it, Herc. Breaking it down for that third race, right?
If I'm saying between those two,
I would be much more surprised if we see Horvath and Sean Johnson at this
point.
Really? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I got
Sean
Johnson.
That's a good debate. We'll leave it up for the fans.
All right.
Who would surprise you more?
Okay, there we go. We will leave it. We'll see what happens when the U.S. team rosters drop. Now, we know that the U.S. is going to open their World Cup journey against Wales on November 21st. And we know that it'll be at Bin Ali Stadium. So why don't we hop on the train, the last train to Qatar, a series by our good friend Martin Einstein, as he takes us to the stadium where the U.S. will open their World Cup journey on November 21st.
The east of Doha is the second most populated city in Qatar, an area surrounded by desert, where in the past rural villages and farming land were located.
This metro station is stunning. The size, it looks really modern, and the shape of it, it's really amazing.
We're actually in Er Rayyan right now, and it's a place that's really close to the desert, has developed so fast. It's become one of the most popular residential areas here, home to the biggest mall, and football
team, yeah.
Al Rayyan, true to its name, means irrigation area, a region rich with tradition because of its people and their soccer team. Ahmed Bin Ali is home to a historic team and a World Cup venue. A 21st century sporting masterpiece, this stadium holds an innovative touch that revolutionized the sports industry around the world.
Hello.
Mr. Saud.
How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Good, nice to meet you as well.
How are you doing?
Do you like the stadium?
Beautiful.
What do you think?
I love it.
Yeah. Before, our local competitions, they start late in the year because we wanted to make sure that the stadiums will not have a thermal injury. The weather will be one of the challenges. We cannot attack or solve this challenge without relying into science.
It's a huge challenge, beating the heat. Today, we're going behind the scenes to reveal the World Cup's most exclusive addition to this very special stadium. An integral air conditioning system for all players on the field and fans in the stands.
This is the heart of the air conditioning for the whole stadium. All the stadium before we built it, we studied for 30 years, what's the effect on the weather using computer simulations. We printed the stadium in a model and we put it in a wind tunnel, and we've seen physically how the wind is interacting as well with each part of the stadium. We push cold air under the seats. Under each seat, we have a small box. It's like a shower head. And air will come out just slowly and then hug the spectator in a very, very gentle way and make the spectator live in that bubble. Field of play is far off. So I wanted something to channel the air to the field of play. And that's why we use these nozzles.
Martin, look.
Ah, it's cold.
This is the famous feature about these stadiums that everyone's talking about.
It is amazing. You can feel it even from here.
Can you see this screen?
Yeah.
This is like a windbreak in order to make sure that this small bubble that we created, it is there and protected against the attack of hot air coming from outside. People will not notice that because it must blend with the architecture as well. We don't want the stadium to be industrial. The stadium is a beautiful creation of human mankind. In our region, because the weather is hot, yes, we have a lot of sunshine, but we shy away from the sunshine because it's a little bit hot. And by doing this, we have a deficiency in vitamin D within the population. Hypertension, very high obesity, and this is because of lack of sports.
You know what they're trying to do when the World Cup finishes? They're going to turn this place into a recreational area for the community to use, like biking, walking, like a track. You know, they're going to take advantage of the fact that there's a roof, AC, and all of this is going to be dismantled.
A solution to avoid the feared white elephant. The great mastermind behind this complex development is Dr. Saud Abdul Ghani, better known as Mr. Cool. A man with a plan, one that can mean a total transformation for life in the desert.
Props to Martin Einstein and the crew on the last train to Qatar. We'll be seeing lots more of that on Football Americas. Kyle Larin, as we run it back for Canadians, Herc, with his first goal of the season for Club Rouge. Took 7 games, but a big goal there for the Canadian
there's
striker.
There's your Canadian hating ways. It took 7 games, he says. He still scored the goal, Seb. CONCACAF leading goal scorer, World Cup qualifying. Don't hate on Canada.
2-0 win for Club Rouge over RFC Sedan in Belgium. Alfonso Davies with an assist as Bayern played to a 2-2 draw against Stuttgart. Shout out to Pellegrino Matarazzo for getting a point against the defending champions.
Yeah, this kid, by the way, who scored the goal, I forget his name, wasn't he like Bayern's youngest goal scorer ever?
Yes, Davies, by the way, also played a part in one of Stuttgart's goals, I should mention.
Oh, Canadian hating ways.
Turnover there, yes, me with my anti-Canada ways. More Bundesliga on ESPN Plus this coming weekend, Saturday, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Borussia Dortmund against Schalke. Oh, big one there. Will we see Gio Reyna? Find out Saturday morning on ESPN Plus. Time for the parting shot. Spanish outlet AS is reporting that the United States is a, quote, serious candidate to serve as host for the next FIFA Club World Cup. Of course, the FIFA World Cup is taking place in November and December, so that means the Club World Cup would take place between February 6th and 12th of 2023. Again, somewhere reportedly in the United States. All right, Herc, what would this mean, do you think, for Seattle's chances at the Club World Cup?
They'd get a lot better than having to play in Abu Dhabi, China, or wherever else they've had the Club World Cup. That's just a fact. You can get some of your people there, some more support. You may do better against some of these world powers, if you want to call them that.
Mm-hmm. So you think it'll help? What do you think they should have it?
Seattle.
No, but they're not going to have the whole tournament in Seattle, bro. They're going to do somewhere neutral. Where would you have them do it?
Why not? That's what they do when they have the Club World Cup at Abu Dhabi.
They All right, go, let's, and there's let's a team say they from don't Abu Dhabi pick there. Seattle. Let's say they pick no, somewhere
but
that's else what,
No,
the
but they
States.
Should pick Seattle. And U.S. Soccer and the Seattle Sounders and whoever else wants to organize this tournament in the United States to do everything in their power mm-hmm. to have it in Seattle. You're going to have a sold-out Lumen Field anytime Seattle plays, and you're going to have Real Madrid. So wherever they play, Lumen Field is going to sell out every single game. I've been to the Club World Cup with Pachuca mm-hmm. in 2010. You're playing in empty stadiums. You're playing in 120-degree weather in winter, okay? It doesn't matter sometimes. This will matter. So if they go there, Abu Dhabi and Dubai, because the organizers want it there, why can't U.S. Soccer say we want it in Seattle? Why can't they increase their own chances? I don't understand why not. If there was a Mexican team playing in this, FMF would do everything they can. If it was Club America to have it at, guess what? Azteca Stadium.
The most clear example of Sounders TV yet.
No, where would you have it? Tell me, RFK.
I would have it anywhere where it's warm. So California, Texas, Florida, take your pick. Plenty of stadiums, and I'm sure you'll draw big crowds there as well. Let's book it, Herc, because you know what we got coming up on Wednesday, a trip to New York City, a Yankee Stadium specifically for the Campeones Cup, featuring New York City FC against Atlas, the champions of Major League Soccer. Against the champions of Liga MX, as we take a look at the tail of the tape for each of these teams in their current season. So, Herc, who you taking on Wednesday night?
This is a tough one. Pick your poison here, but I'm going to take Atlas.
Really?
Yes, and the bet is quite enticing. I believe it's at plus 275 if Atlas wins. Let me tell you why I'm going to take Atlas. Atlas is a dumpster fire right now. They've got like a 1% chance of making it the postseason, and they understand this. They understand it so much that they decided to take the weekend off in Lasa San Luis. They didn't start with like six starters. Literally, Camilo Vargas, the starting goalkeeper, Hugo Nervo, Santa Maria, very important players, sat this one out. They're letting everything ride on Campeones Cup. And if we look at the other side of that equation, New York City FC, New York City's got something like 5 points in their last 10 games. They've conceded first in 8 of the last 9 games. They're by no means a good position for me to be betting on them. So I'm going to take Atlas.
Okay, you're going to take Atlas there at plus 275. I'm taking New York City FC because I don't bet against New York City at Yankee Stadium. Herc, you just don't do it. It's not a very good payout there. What is that, minus 143? So there you can see Vegas, the odds makers, they agree with me. They see New York City as a very big favorite. Also, shout out to Sean Johnson. I feel like should this come down to a penalty shootout or anything else, New York City might have the edge there at home with Sean Johnson.
Camilo Vargas is one of the best goalkeepers in Liga MX, if not the best.
I'm giving Sean Johnson the edge in penalties. Campeones Cup Wednesday, New York City FC against Atlas. Coverage starts 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2. Herc and I will be there in New York. Post-game coverage live from the Big Apple as New York City FC and Atlas square off. Herc, I'll see you in New York. In 48 hours,
no,
the next edition
no, you
of
won't.
Football Americas. I won't?
Well, not at the hotel. You picked another one.
No, they wouldn't let me into your fancy hotel. No, I'll have to talk to my agent about that. They said, nope, Seb, you're not in the A-list category, bro.
You're in the RFK of hotels.
Wow.
I am in the Lumen Field of hotels.
I hope this hotel isn't on fire.